Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, if you see someone who might require CPR, would you know what to do? You might have seen it on television, but is that a correct depiction of what action to take? Today is World Restart a Heart Day, and we're joined by David Hall, CEO of Lifeline Ambulance Service. Afternoon, David.
Afternoon, John.
Does it happen often? Does it happen often in Ireland that, you know, somebody randomly has the training and does help somebody in this way?
Yeah, it's the to follow on from your theme earlier on, it's a hug of a different kind.
Yes.
But it's a far more important hug. And yeah, it does. Like, we've obviously a lot of cardiac arrests happen every year for a variety of reasons. Different people's hearts stop for different reasons. And, you know, there's far more detailed reasons as to why that happens. But ultimately, when presented with somebody, be that on the road, be that in a bus stop, in a bus shelter, in work, in office, in schools, it's happened in every building in the country and every type of building and every type of employment and on the street, where someone has collapsed for whatever reason and indeed something's happened where their heart has stopped. And, you know, we have a phenomenal group of first responders, voluntary first responders who've been trained around the country. There's about 3,200 of them, and there's 3,700 defibrillators positioned around the country as well. So we have an infrastructure there. It needs to be bigger. It needs to be better. It needs to be better funded. But ultimately, the objective of the exercise is if you have a cardiac arrest and for whatever reason your heart decides it's going to stop today, you need to have people willing and able and wanting to help you to try and give you the best shot of staying alive. And, you know, one of the overall themes is the song Staying Alive. And that's one of the themes that many people use as an educational tool for people to promote trying to keep somebody else alive, which could be indeed a family friend, a colleague or a perfect stranger. It's irrelevant. The objective of the exercise is to have the skills and the confidence and to do that little bit of homework to be able to take instructions if required or indeed know what to do.
If someone was to say, like, and I'm sure there are places out there where you can learn to do CPR, how long does it take to train someone to do it?
So there's a community first responder course that's a recognised course from the Irish Heart Foundation and the Pre-Hospital Emergency Care Council. On the Pre-Hospital Emergency Care Council's website, it's an unfortunate name, www.fec.ie, but that is their abbreviation, T-H-E-C-C, that is, not F-E-C-K. So yeah, they have a list of approved and authorised organisations that are authorised, my own included, to provide those courses. The Irish Heart Foundation also provides those courses, as do many of the voluntary organisations, the voluntary first aid organisations. So there's umpteen organisations that do it. The proper training is recognised being a 4-hour course for a maximum of sort of 8 students. So there's a couple of formulas and curriculums that are set aside and ratios of classes for professional standards and standing. They're all certified. All the instructors are qualified. It's well worthwhile. And indeed, you know, I think there's a lot of money spent on pouches for mobile phones recently. Every single school child should have the confidence and have the training to be able to do CPR at the very least, if not use a defibrillator. Yeah. And that way we can save a lot more lives. Like, there's a huge effort gone into this, Sean. Only last number of weeks ago in Mullingar, first responders group met in their hundreds. I think there were 600 gathered in Mullingar to look at best practice and how to improve things. We have a phenomenal ethos around the country of volunteers in their community responding to people who have had a cardiac arrest to try and save their lives. So we have that ethos that's there. Everybody listening and everybody else, I believe, needs to take that next extra little step, because we all want to not be that person on the ground who needs that help. But in circumstances where we are, we want to have somebody there who's willing and knows how to give me a shot at saving my life.
Right, of course. Some people listening might think, oh God, I wouldn't do that. I'd be afraid I'd do more harm than good. Can you do more harm than good?
No, you can't. And that's a common challenge, you know, in relation to placing your hands in the right place. But ultimately, you know, you can do less harm in doing CPR on somebody who doesn't need it than not doing it on someone who does.
Mm.
And doing it on somebody who does need CPR, you double, if not triple, the chance they live.
Yeah.
So those statistics are just simple. And those statistics are mind-boggling. It's about speed, efficiency, effectiveness. And we have an emergency phone system from a 999 perspective for 112 with the Dublin Fire Brigade and the HSE National Ambulance Service, who have now escalated their training levels to the call takers who can instruct you how to do CPR on the phone.
Ah.
Who do it every single day without hesitation, very clear, very calm, with your phone on speaker, and they will guide you and they they will instruct you up to and including putting on a defibrillator, irrespective of your level of training. So it's to know that the system has fail-safe mechanisms there. The people who need you, need you. You need to focus. And as I say, the National Ambulance Service and the staff in the Dublin Fire Brigade, all of whom, they know what resources they're sending. They know when they can send people. And they can do that at the same time as guiding you to do efficient and effective CPR. And you would be absolutely shocked at the success and the calmness and the coolness at which that happens on a daily basis, Sean. This is happening now as we're having this interview. Oh. And this happens, and people are prepared for this to happen on a daily basis through all of the emergency services. And it's something they do as second nature, but they do it knowing the difference it makes and the lives that get saved.
Yeah. So run us through the fundamentals of it. And I suppose first off is positioning. Where exactly on the chest do you put your hands?
So the most important fundamental is safety and making sure, and believe it or not, one of the common mistakes that are made, and this might sound strange, but people will resonate with this when I say it. One of the most important things to do when someone has collapsed is ensuring someone has called an ambulance, because everybody gathered thinks someone else is ringing. And it becomes like Pokemon, where everyone's standing around looking at each other. And you need to make sure if someone has called, because the worst thing you could do is prolong additional definitive care coming to you. So it's very important to ensure that an ambulance has been called. Secondly, is making sure it's safe for you and safe for the patient to approach. Thirdly, is making sure they're flat on a hard surface on their back and checking by asking them, can they hear you and are they conscious? At the early stages, when someone's about to go into a cardiac arrest, if they haven't done so already, there sometimes is breathing that's masked, there's breathing that is, it has a very technical name that's not relevant, but it has breathing that then stops. And it's making sure that you don't, that you listen clearly to see if those breath sounds are present and when they stop that are there. And then the sequence of events after that is very, very straightforward. You're tilting someone's head back to clear their airway, and you're positioning your heel of your hand on a breastbone. You avoid the ribs, just on a breastbone, and you're interlocking your hands, standing right over the person. So you're kneeling right up against them, and you're leaning right over them, and you're doing chest compressions. The chest compressions that are recommended. And this is a vigorous exercise and a vigorous activity. And it's 5 centimeters down, and to do 100 of those to 120 a minute. So this is not, you know, this is to do this properly. This requires some strength and some stability, but you can rely on other bystanders to help you. If anybody does feel tired in doing this, they shouldn't have any hesitation in handing this over. And if they need to be on the phone to a call taker from the National Ambulance Service or Dublin Fire Brigade, they will stay with you. They will guide. And they will also encourage you to call out your compressions as you're doing them to try and gauge your rhythm, gauge your speed, whether you may need to increase that to reach the target of the 100 and 120. And then after your 30 compressions, the recommendation then is to do 2 inflations from a mouth, the old traditional, what was referred to as mouth-to-mouth, to see if the chest rises and to have some oxygen going in. So it's a very, and that is the same process, Sean, and it's just on repeat. It is straightforward. It is something that can be instructed over the phone. The intention would be that everybody should know how to do it and should have confidence to do it. And it is obviously naturally, you know, on occasions it works. On some occasions it doesn't work. There's nothing else can be done there. But all you're trying to do is ensure that the balance is tipped in favour of that person who's on the ground, who may be relying on strangers or family or friends, and it has affected everybody.
Yeah. And normally if it's working, does the person wake up or... is it you're just looking for the signs of them breathing on their own again?
Yeah, you're looking for signs of the breathing on their own, and you're going to be checking the pulse. So you do your 30 compressions, you do your 2 breaths, you go back and do your 30 compressions at that speed. There shouldn't be any longer than 10 seconds from the gap from stopping compressions to doing the 2 breaths. And then after you do each minute, you then pause for a couple of seconds and check and see if you feel a pulse, or indeed to start breathing spontaneously themselves. The next level of resuscitation to restart the heart is obviously applying a defibrillator, and an automatic defibrillator, which the technology is spectacular now, where it can be applied, again, can be done so instructed over the phone. And these are nothing to be scared of. You cannot do anything wrong with a defibrillator. It will not let you shock someone who does not need to be shocked. And indeed, I couldn't stick it on you now, Sean, and shock you as the old machines 20 years ago could. These are foolproof, and they're designed in that way. So the next resuscitation and CPR is the cornerstone of any resuscitation. The next level is trying to have a defibrillator attached very quickly to see if the heart, for all intents and purposes, needs to be jump-started.
Yeah. Somebody actually has texted in a question, and they're not, I don't think they're being facetious here, but if the person has some metal, like a piercing of some sort, a nipple piercing, does is that something to take into account, or does it affect the process with a defib machine?
No, as I say, that is something that would be taking into consideration by anyone who's applying and doing defibrillation. Same with chest hair. There's a whole host of considerations that are done at the next level of resuscitation. And there are considerations in relation to, you know, whether there's any existing pacemakers, whether there's any existing wiring. There's a whole host of considerations that anybody at that level who's resuscitating somebody will take into consideration. But as I say, the resuscitation training is manageable. It is designed for people who know nothing.
Yeah.
And that's to the reassurance. It's designed for people who know nothing. And a huge amount of work has been done, an enormous amount of work has been done from a community first responder perspective, where there are communities, first responders in every community, and they're very active ones. And there's also defibrillators in some GAA clubs and some soccer clubs, and indeed outside some pharmacies. So there is an infrastructure and a network that's there. And I think everyone should pause and have a look at where the nearest defibrillator is in their community, and participate by encouraging schools, clubs, societies, and indeed friends and family to learn CPR and learn how to use a defibrillator, because it may be their family, their friend or their colleague, or who cares, it could be a complete and utter stranger. The point is, it is a gift of life, and it is a life-changing training that can be done that dramatically changes people's lives.
Absolutely. David, thanks a million for talking to us today. That was David Hall there, CEO of Lifeline Ambulance Services.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.